So basically, one of the things that we also want to do is we want to try to eat locally and seasonally. And so we want to try to buy from farmers markets and community-supported agricultural projects. The more we can have a connection with our farmer or our food provider, the more we're not going to get into these things where that whole big thing where a company in California was actually grinding up downer cows and doing all kinds of things. If we had a connection with our farmer, they would never do that because we'd be out to the farm, we'd see the operation, and if it didn't look right, you know, and didn't look wholesome and healthy, we wouldn't buy their products. But unfortunately, the average food item in our culture travels 1,500 miles before we actually get it on our plate. So there's things coming from all over the place. You know, they even do crazy things where they'll ship spinach or salmon to China so that they can pluck it or debone it and then ship it back here. So in effect, we're eating old food, very old food, no qi left in the food.
And why you want to do it local is because you never know what kind of other types of bacteria and stuff that you can pick up from other types of fruits and vegetables out there that are shipped from that far away. You can pick up something that you can't fight off because you wouldn't even have it locally, huh?
Yeah, exactly. There can be, you know, major, major problems coming across the border from Mexico. You know, you can have the whole Montezuma's revenge from a standpoint of water being sprayed on there that got bacterial contamination, even if it might be organic. So yeah, you really have to pay attention. And the other aspect of eating seasonally is that gives your body a break too. If you can eat things when they actually are growing naturally, so you eat more salad-y type of things in the summertime, and during the wintertime, salad doesn't grow, so you eat more rooty vegetables and more soups and stews. That way you, again, lower your risk of food intolerance and allergy because you're constantly changing the foods and you're constantly getting different phytonutrients and different vital nutrients from all of the different colors and kinds of foods that you'll be eating.
And you'll find it in the pickup of energy and chi that you'll start pulling from getting a variety of foods like that.
Yep. So I'm going to give some basic concepts here with regards to the three basic food groups. One of the things that's going on with carbs is that we're eating way too much of them in a refined nature. So that's the biggest thing that's happening in our culture. With regards to fats, again, we've demonized fats, especially animal fats, and the diet dictocrats have actually recommended the wrong kinds of fats, the polyunsaturated veggie and grain oils that actually are clogging our arteries. And with proteins, we tend to have lots of problems with antibiotic and hormone residues. We tend to ingest the cruelty of the factory farming. So you definitely want to get to the place where you're, especially with fats and oils and meats and eggs and fish, that type of thing, you really want to be trying to buy the best quality you can. You really don't want to be skimping on food. We tend to put a lot of emphasis on buying good electronics, good cars, good things like that, good clothes, but we tend to want to look for really cheap bargains when it comes to food, and that's actually not a wise choice. You know, you really get what you pay for with regards to food and supplements in particular.
Now, as far as like some of the supplements that you can buy, like on proteins and different vitamins out there, I mean, are these worth your money?
Sure. You just have to get good quality ones. For example, you want to be buying basic vitamin mineral supplements from the health food store versus like Walmart or any of the discount stores. Any of the Centrum and those type of one-a-day type of things, that's all garbage. There's no way for you to actually get a one-a-day vitamin because water-soluble vitamins, that means they actually dissolve in water, are gone within 4 hours. You urinate those out within 4 hours. So you have to take a multivitamin at least twice a day to be able to be protective, you know, preferably three times a day. And one of the big things with a multivitamin is, again, only menstruating women can use a multivitamin that contains iron. Anybody else runs the risk of iron overload, and that actually can create major problems with inflammation, and it can actually feed cancer. So not enough iron is bad for you, and too much iron is bad for you.
Yeah, see, there's a whole bunch of different minerals that are like that. Certainly selenium is something that will give you the spark you need, but you get too much of it, it'll kill you. So you're right. It's amazing that the drug companies that make these like Centrum, One A Day, Flintstones, you read on there, and they've actually gone through this hydrogenated process. And I don't know how they justify that personally, and how they, because they know that's bad for you, and yet they use the vitamins that way, and they're supposed to be looking out for our best benefit.
True. Yeah, and they're loaded with tons and tons of sugar. And yeah, another factor for the kids out there, too, you don't want to ever give them chewable vitamins. It actually will take the enamel off their teeth. The chewable Flintstone type of things, loaded with sugar, which depresses the immune system for 4 hours, no matter what kind of sugar except for stevia. And so not really good for the teeth, especially vitamin C. You never want to be eating chewable vitamin C. It'll pull the enamel right off your teeth. So capsules or tablets are better with regards to vitamin C. And
it's the same way with them gummy bear types, right?
Yeah, exactly. And the aspect with regards to vitamin C, it's actually the best way to be able to battle constipation. You can take buffered vitamin C. You can't use ester C. That won't work. But buffered vitamin C, you can take it until it loosens your stools, and it's the greatest thing for being able to battle traveler's constipation, where you just get a little irregular because you've traveled. So it's one of the best ways.
The sorbic acid flush is what they call it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So there's some general principles here that we want to cover. Basically, breakfast should be a protein meal. You want to try as much as you can to avoid breakfast-oriented foods at breakfast. You can eat them some other time in the day, but if you eat them at breakfast, you'll find that you yo-yo your blood sugar and that you tend to crash in the afternoon. Because you fasted all night, your blood sugar is already low during the morning, so you definitely want to be able to stabilize it with a good protein meal. If you do that experiment, you'll see that you have lasting energy throughout the whole day, and your chi is actually better through the day. The other thing is that you don't really want to be dieting. You really want to, over time, change your diet and lifestyle in a slow, steady fashion. But the typical Weight Watchers dieting type of thing just creates a yo-yo effect so that when you actually stop that diet, you actually gain more weight back, studies have proven. So, yeah, you definitely want to avoid that whole thing. The other big thing is that you want to be trying to eat your biggest meal at lunch if that works for you. You want to try to make your snacks protein and fatty, not so much carby snacks, because they just yo-yo your blood sugar and tend to make you problematic with regards to you had some sugar and then a little while later you want some more sugar after you've crashed. The last meal of the day should be no later than 8 p.m. because the liver from 1 to 3 a.m. in the morning actually wants to help detox your body and wants to be unhindered by dealing with digestion. The other thing that you can do if you're trying to lose weight or you want to lubricate your joints or strengthen your thyroid is you can take 2 tablespoons of organic coconut oil a day and just eat that. And, of course, you can cook with that. That's a really good quality fat. So grains, we're going to go through each of the basic food groups real quickly here with regards to each one. So with regards to grains, you want to try to focus as much as you can on whole grains. So in the way they came in nature. So for example, brown rice is always brown. It grows brown. You have to actually take off the hull to make it white rice. And by taking off the hull and making it cook quicker, you also take away a lot of minerals and a lot of nutrients and open yourself up for tons and tons of vitamin deficiencies when you do that. The other thing that you want to try to do with regards to grains is if you soak them overnight in some kind of slightly acidic solution, a little bit of lemon juice, a little bit of yogurt, something, you'll actually deactivate the mineral and enzyme inhibitors that are on their bran, and it will make them much easier to digest. So that will help with that whole thing. You also want to try as much as you can to avoid all boxed cereals. So the inside center portion of the grocery store or the health food store is basically a processed food wasteland, and you really want to try to avoid that like the plague. There's really nothing there for you to eat. Those cereals have been boxed and can stay that way forever. They actually did an amazing study where they had a rat eat the box that the cereal came in, you know, another group of rats eat actually the cereal, and the rats who ate the box lived longer than the rats who ate the cereal. So not much nutrients in box cereal. The other thing that you want to think about is, again, you want to try to keep your bread consumption down to basically 2 pieces a day. There, again, we're getting into refined carbohydrates. Same thing with pasta. All pasta is a highly refined food. And if you think about it, pasta is basically just a vehicle for getting the sauce in your mouth. So you can actually put your sauce on brown rice, on barley, on quinoa, on amaranth, on buckwheat, you know, some kind of a whole grain. You can even do it on spaghetti squash, or we make a lasagna where we use cut zucchini, and so that's our noodle. So there's lots of ways you can do to try to sneak a little extra vegetable here and there and a little bit more of a whole food instead of a processed one. The other big factor with regards to grains that people really need to be mindful of is that gluten intolerance, that's the protein that's on certain types of grain like wheat and spelt and rye and barley, is increasing dramatically. The last reports I saw, 1 in 133 people in the United States are actually gluten intolerant, and that can cause major problems in your small intestines to the point where you won't be able to absorb food very well. The other thing is you actually don't need grains to live a healthy life. We have the intestines of a Paleolithic hunter-gatherer. So basically, farming was invented 10, 12,000 years ago, and our intestines hasn't changed at all. If you didn't want to eat grain, and my wife and I, we really don't eat grain much at all, and we've not for the last 5 years, it doesn't hurt the health at all. So it just depends on what you want to do, and if you're having health challenges, you might want to check that out, especially rheumatoid arthritis. There's always a component to problems with grain. So with beans are a good thing. There's tons and tons of different types of beans out there. Again, you want to soak them in some type of slightly acidic solution before you cook them. Overnight, you soak them. Again, you want to stay away from soybeans, and you want to have long cooking time for beans so that you can deactivate the sugars, which is usually what gives the gaseous effect from beans. So lots of good nutrients in beans. With regards to fruits and vegetables, eat more of them, that's for sure. Lots and lots of vegetables. We need much more of them in our diet. The other thing is...
Yeah, how about for the meat eaters? Can they get away with eating some meat?
Sure.
How bad are those hamburgers and steaks that we like or the chicken we like?
Yeah, no, there's actually no problem with meat whatsoever. Even the saturated fat in meat is actually very good for the body. It actually is a major fuel for the heart. Butyric acid is actually the chosen fuel that the heart will use, and that's a saturated fat. So there's no problems at all with that kind of stuff. The problem is quantity. So you really want to make sure that your plate has got other things on it besides just a whole big 25-ounce steak. If you eat a piece of meat or fish or eggs or any type of protein that's actually bigger than the palm of your hand, roughly, you know, the size and the thickness, if you eat that at one time, it actually just disrupts your blood sugar and starts to be turned into body fat. The body can't be able to utilize more than about that size of a piece of protein at one sitting. So 3 meals a day with protein is fine. But protein is definitely necessary for rebuilding the body, for doing repair work, and especially as we age, most people are protein deficient. So I definitely encourage...
How many grams of protein would the typical person need to get in their diet regularly?
Right around the aspect of 12 to 18 grams, 3 to 4 per meal is where you want to get to. Yeah, that's where you're wanting.
So somewhere like through the whole day, then, like, does that mean like 50 to 60 grams through the whole day after 3 meals of protein? Are you talking like 15 to 20 grams per meal? Because that's what a typical hamburger would run, probably be about that many grams of protein, right?
No, that's a little high for the aspect because then you're usually cutting out a lot of the other foods that you need. But, you know, it's not a real exact science that way. I don't look at it that way anyway. It just depends on if you're cooking for yourself, making, you know, soups and stews and real food, and just kind of trying to divide up your plate with regards to you've got your protein portion, your veggies. You really want to just kind of look at it that way. You know, it's hard enough. You know, you don't want to be telling patients, okay, you got to get out your kitchen scale and it needs to be these many ounces. Most people, they won't do that, so...
Well, I guess that's true, but you can get away with eating like a hamburger at a meal or something like that, and if you use your rule of thumb of around the size of your hand, then you're getting plenty of protein.
Sure, sure. Actually, and it's funny, you know, people love to attack the hamburger. There's actually nothing wrong with the burger. The problem that causes you major problem is the bun. That's where the hydrogenated fats and the trans fats are in the bun. Good luck trying to find at the regular grocery store, a bun that has the right fats and oils in it. So, yeah, it's not the burger, it's the bun. That's the major health culprit. The other thing that you want to try to do is small wild fruits are actually really nutritious, like little tiny wild blueberries. Most of the nutrients in fruits are actually right around the skin. So the inside pulpy part is, you know, sweet and good tasting, but actually the skin part is where a lot of the nutrients are. So the more small the fruit, the better off you're going to get, the more bang for the buck you're going to get. And if you can, again, mix it with some fat, all of your veggies need fat to be able to be absorbed. So don't eat your veggies dry and try to always have some kind of fat with your fruit, you know, like an apple and almond butter, some homemade whipped cream or cream and some blueberries, you know, things like that, some cream on top yogurt with your blueberries. Something like that would be very helpful.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good and tasty anyway, so
yeah,
that's not going to be hard. Huh?
Nope. So now we're going to go on to fats and oils. So with fats and oils, it's actually definitely super important to buy organic and cold-pressed. That's a really big factor. The oils should definitely be in a dark glass bottle or a plastic black plastic bottle because fats and oils are actually very sensitive to heat and light, so you want to definitely keep any of that stuff out of sunlight. My recommendation usually to people is eat a high good fat, no bad fat diet. And that will actually, as we get going here, I'll tell you some other things is what it does to the body. It actually strengthens your cell membranes. Each of your membranes of your cell is made up of a fat protein, and fat layer. So by eating good quality fats, you actually strengthen every cell in your body. And so when you're doing your qi training and you think about all of the qi going through all the cells, you'll really be able to strengthen them too with all of your proper nutrition choices with regards to good fats. The other thing is again, like we talked about, there's lots of good aspects that cholesterol does for the body. One of the big things that's been epidemic in my practice that I've seen is major vitamin D deficiency, and that's because people are constantly afraid of the sun, putting on sunscreen, and they're also not eating cholesterol-containing foods because they're fearful. And in order to manufacture vitamin D at your skin, you need cholesterol-containing foods. So we're having this major epidemic of vitamin D deficiency, and the darker your skin, the more epidemic it becomes, especially in the winter. So you definitely want to have your vitamin D level checked. The proper test is called 25-hydroxycalciferol vitamin D test, and the normal optimum numbers is 55 nanograms per milliliter. That's where you want to get to from a standpoint of optimum. There's a really good book called The UV Advantage by Dr. Michael Hollick that gives you a lot of information and talks about optimum vitamin D levels will decrease your cancer risk by a great degree for prostate, breast, and colon cancer.
What you're saying is you need to get out there and get some sun once in a while.
Once in a while, yeah. The aspect of 20 minutes of sun exposure in the wintertime is really not true, though. You really need to be taking things like a good quality cod liver oil, because during the wintertime, that 20 minutes of sun exposure just on your face and hands is nowhere near enough. And so during the winter is when people become extremely deficient in vitamin D. If vitamin D was actually discovered today, it would be classified as a hormone. It's a very, very important substance, so you definitely want to...
And you say cod oil is what's going to be full of vitamin D?
Yeah, cod liver oil actually has, and there's only one brand right now that's actually the accepted one in my practice. It's actually from greenpastures.com. It's a fermented cod liver oil, and so it has the proper ratio of vitamin D and vitamin A in there. And so it's actually really very, very useful in being able to take during the less warm season when you're not out getting good sun exposure, or if you live in a cloudy climate like Seattle or places like that where it's cloudy a lot, even in the summertime.
Or in Alaska where you may not see the sun for about 6 months.
Exactly, yep. So one of the things that I want to give you a list here of all the good fats. So here's the good fats. So ghee, which is clarified butter. Butter, and again, all of these things are organic. You really want to spend the extra money and get them organic, get them from a pasture-fed animal if you can. Coconut oil. Extra virgin olive oil, and the extra virgin means that it's the first pressing. Anything that says not extra virgin is extracted with solvents, and so you're going to be eating solvent residues. Good organic lard from pastured animals. Lard has really gotten a bad rap, and there's nothing actually wrong with lard whatsoever if it comes from an organic pig and they're treated correctly. So tallow and suet, those are the more pasty type of fats from beef. Duck and goose fat, cold-pressed sesame seed oil, cod liver oil, fish oils, and flax oil. And those last three, cod liver oil, fish oil, and flax oil, you never cook with those. Those are extremely, extremely sensitive to heat, so you never heat those up ever. So the bad fats that you want to stay away from and never have any of is soybean oil, sunflower oil, safflower oil, corn oil, canola oil. Unfortunately, the health food industry has totally sold their soul to the soybean and the canola oil industry. And canola oil, actually, because it's a liquid oil, has tons and tons of trans fats that they don't have to list on the label. So you really want to stay away from canola oil at all costs. Cottonseed oil, they love to actually cook nuts in cottonseed oil, and that's actually a really great oil for varnishing your door, but not for eating. And you want to stay away from all types of margarine, all types of fully or partially hydrogenated oils, Crisco, or any type of solvent extracted oils, and anything that has trans fats in it. So those are all things that you really want to avoid. If we could just change that one thing, that would make a huge difference in our health. And why that is because all of those bad fats, they actually have too much omega-6 fats in them. And omega-6 fats are actually inflammatory. They create major problems to the body. And so that's how come you get all kinds of problems with those fats. They will actually raise up your omega-6 concentration in your body and create major inflammation. And we never get enough of the omega-3 fats, which are anti-inflammatory. So we have this big disruption in our body of way too much inflammation and not enough anti-inflammatory things to counter.
Yeah, we did an article on the blog about that, as far as the ratio that you use on that, as far as omega-3 to omega-6. You do need omega-6 for them inflammatory, but we don't need it in the ratios like they're coming out with. And it's so easy to get overloaded on the omega-6 to the point that it's actually harmful, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, if you eat a varied diet, you're going to get enough of the omega-6s just from natural grains and food and meats and different things, even just normal type of things. But yeah, we're getting way too much. Like, for example, with regards to supermarket eggs, because they feed the chickens incorrectly and they're not in a free-range type of environment, they don't get to peck around outside and eat bugs and get any exercise. They're trapped in a kind of factory farm type of environment. Those chickens and those eggs can have 20 to 30 times the omega-6 content that what they should have. So that, in effect, is really true that people say, is an egg good or bad for your health? Well, it depends which egg. If it's a pastured egg where they get to run around and eat bugs and they get to, you know, eat really good food, then that egg is going to be high in omega-3 and it will be good for you. If it's a regular supermarket egg, then it's going to be too much omega-6 fat and it will inflame you. So yeah, it just depends. It's unfortunately, with regards to nutrition, a lot of it is the devil is in the details. It really, that's the big part. The other factor that I want to let you know is that each one of the fats and oils actually has a temperature gradient, a heat tolerance, just the way the engine oil in your car does. So basically, how it goes is the oils and fats that can take the most heat, so if you did want to fry something, and fried food, you know, too much of it actually creates problems because of the damaging of the fat while you fry things. The ones that can withstand the heat the best are tallow and lard and suet, coconut oil, ghee, butter, and then olive oil is the least. It can't withstand heat very much at all, so you don't want to be frying with olive oil. Olive oil really should be used in like a soup or a stew where it doesn't get too much past boiling temperature because it's actually relatively a fragile oil. It's good for you, but it can't withstand heat very well. So let's jump to nuts and seeds. So basically, nuts and seeds are actually really good for the body. They have lots of good nutrients. One of the things you want to be aware of, again, is that cottonseed oil aspect. A lot of the nuts that you're going to find at the store are cooked in that. So you definitely want to become a faithful label reader so you know what you're putting in your mouth. The other aspect is we, unfortunately, they're making it very difficult for us to be getting raw almonds. They are gassing all raw almonds now with propyl oxide gas. So in effect, they're actually not raw. And that's because they were having some bad farming practices. And instead of figuring out how they were getting fecal contamination, they decided to pasteurize all almonds. So there's just a lot of kooky things that go on in the food world that most people don't know anything about. The other thing that with regards to nuts is you can actually do a really great process where you take and turn your nuts into crispy nuts. So you get some raw nuts, you soak them in salt water overnight, and then you dehydrate them back in your oven, and you'll be surprised at nuts that have a slightly bitter taste when they're raw, like pecans or walnuts, become very buttery and amazingly different flavor when you've soaked them in the salt water overnight, drained them, and then dehydrated them back in your oven at the lowest temperature it'll go for anywhere to 24 to 36 hours, depending on your location. You'll find that that really makes a truly amazing nut. And again, with regards to nuts, that also deactivates the enzyme and mineral inhibitors on the nuts, so makes them much easier to absorb and digest. The other thing that people are unaware of is that with regards to almond butter versus peanut butter, you definitely would be better off choosing almond butter, and that's because peanuts are legumes, not really a nut, and they also have not as good a fatty acid profile as the almond. And there's a really nasty mold that's called aflatoxin that's very easy to contaminate peanuts, as we saw with this whole contamination thing recently with the peanuts, that can be very toxic to the body. So you're overall better eating almond butter than peanut butter if you like almond butter. Let's see here. Let's go to meats and fish and eggs. So we definitely want to try as much as we can to eat wild and pasture-fed, and free-range is best. There's a couple of good websites, Vital Choice Seafood, that's a good website, .com, where you can get truly, for sure, wild salmon, not farmed. They actually have a crazy thing where they put two artificial carotene type of dyes in farmed salmon to make the flesh salmon colored, because farmed salmon, if they didn't do that, their flesh would be gray, and who would buy gray salmon? That's kind of an oxymoron. So, and another good website is uswellnessmeats.com. You can get all kinds of pasture-fed meats there, and lots of good things there. Another thing to think about is a naturopathic concept. If you're having a problem with an organ, if you eat the organ of that animal and it comes from a clean animal, you're going to be able to help heal up your organ. So for example, if you were having heart issues, if you ate some chicken hearts in soups or stews or some way that you like them, that will actually strengthen your heart and give your body a whole bunch of CoQ10 to be able to strengthen the heart. So there's lots that you can do for detoxing your liver by eating chicken livers and things like that. So there's some good processes that way. But one of the other things with regards to meats is it's a good source of being able to get minerals. And back in 1933, the U.S. Congress had a symposium that said our U.S. soils are dangerously low in minerals. So there's six foods where you can be for sure of getting a higher mineral content. And those six foods are nuts and seeds, pasture free-range eggs, sea vegetables, Celtic sea salt, which is a natural unrefined sea salt, organ meats, and chicken broth. So those are all places to be able to get a lot more minerals in your body.
Wow, you just gave us a whole bunch of ways to keep us on the nutrition side. We really do appreciate you coming on. You've given us a little education and what we should be looking for and what we should be going over. I surely got a whole bunch of good information.
Definitely not wanting people to torture themselves by trying to attain dietary perfection. That's not where it's at. You know, basically, you just want to try to understand how to keep your ingredients non-toxic and healthy the majority of the time. And got to have fun with your food, you know, so you basically, you just really want to pay a good amount of attention to the fats and oils. That's the biggest one that makes it inconvenient because you can't even eat out very well without constantly being problematic with that stuff. So, yep.
And part of the, I know in your case there, Thomas, just like in my case, I mean, we just found out as you start making this changeover, you start getting more selective. You start feel the pickup of energy. You feel so much better that you don't want to go back to that old way usually. And so you actually start learning more about it and you start eating better. Just really, it kind of catches you up that way, doesn't it? I mean, you didn't start out being this purist, but you kind of end up being that purist, right?
Yeah, not at all. I mean, boy, I was eating all kinds of junk long ago. So yeah, it goes in cycles, definitely. You know, these are just some principles of nature that you try to learn about, and you try to create some experimenting with yourself so you can create your own body's owner's manual, you know, because all of us are uniquely different. You know, we have biological individuality, so you have to find out what works for you. But there,
yeah, that's really good advice there. I mean, because everybody is so different, like chemistry, aren't they?
Yep. Yep, definitely. You know, I have a major sweet tooth. So basically what my wife and I do is we eat good all week long, and then we have treats on the weekend. So, you know, that way we're not denying ourselves except for, you know, a few days of the week to try to just keep, you know, the immune system building and keep the body majority of the time having good foods coming in. But, yeah, no, we, you know, I try to make things, though, instead of trying, you know, it's hard to buy even good quality stuff at the health food store. If you really become a label reader, you start to see that they use the wrong fats. So, you know, it's good that you're actually making stuff yourself because then you know that it's fresh and you know, have control over, you know, the ingredients.
Well, big thing here is, like, as people start getting in better shape and they start getting their chi energy up and running real well, with all the tips you just gave them in this thing, I mean, I just don't see how they're not going to get even better results now. So we really thank you for coming on today, you know, informing everybody. It was an outstanding thing. I learned a whole lot, and we sure appreciate it.